morning and welcome. These talks will be very short, very informal, and there will not be a whole lot of astrology to them. There will probably be much more philosophy than there will be astrology. And so they're all designed to be about 45 to an hour long, and so there'll be plenty of time for popping around or going to lunch or things like that. I'm sort of in trouble. One of the standard things that you do as a speaker when you're in trouble is you quote somebody. And that way you deflect. You have something to say and you deflect from yourself when things go wrong. And well, you can say it with somebody else. We'll start with a line that comes from a poem about a farmer who is plowing, and he plows through a mouse's nest. It's from Bobby Burns, and everybody, I think, knows the line. The best laid plans of mice and men oft go awry. And that's what this whole series of talks is. My father, when I was a little boy, used to tell me, "You've got big nails in your head." And I don't think it translates. It's a statement from German. And it means something to the effect of somebody that has big plans that rarely ever carries any of them out. And so I had an idea for these talks. It was just a simple plan that I was going to carry out, and I figured it would be very easy. And I was very much mistaken, and I'm often mistaken about astrological things. Now, there are several reasons why this proved to be so difficult, and all of those reasons are important philosophically, and they're important for studying astrology. Now, this is supposedly a Rosicrucian Fellowship summer school, so we will liberally quote Rosicrucian philosophy. And one of the ideas in that philosophy is that character is destiny. And what that means in very simple terms is that what we are is what our life is going to be like. No matter how odd the circumstances seem, we find ourselves in another part of the world from our home, or we find ourselves meeting unusual people or doing things like that, those are things that are expressions of our character. And if we had a different character, we would have a different life. It's a fairly clear statement, and there are a lot of philosophies that agree with that. The Rosicrucian Fellowship is an association of Christian mystics. And the way that mystics look at things is pretty much the opposite of the way that materialists look at things. The materialists look at from the outside in. They look at things outside of them, and the truth is outside of them. Mystics work from the inside out. Work with spiritual impulses, with intuitions, with creative things, and they work and manifest them without. Now, modern spiritual philosophy is probably both, and it's healthy and it's a healthy idea to have both in your consciousness, working from the outside in and from the inside out. Materialists tend to see things in terms of determinism. They would state that our environment molds our character, and that we are what we are because of the environment that we have grown up in. Well, there's some truth to that, because it's almost impossible to not be affected by your environment. As when I brushed against the stinging nettles this morning when I was picking my breakfast out of the garden. You certainly know that you're affected by the environment. We agree with that as mystics. But we would go so far as to say that we are here for experience. This is a testing ground. It is a proving ground, and by interacting with the macrocosmic cosmos in the external environment is how we prove whether our thoughts, whether our feelings, or things that come from within can be verified when they are objectified and placed out before us for the world to see. But mystics would go much further than that. The mystic would say that we are drawn to a specific environment because of our character. We're drawn there because we need that. We need that to become what we are, and so we draw ourselves to the environment that we're supposed to be in. In fact, mystics would even go a step further, and they would say that we create our environment. Literally, all of the things we see around us, including the flora, the fauna, the meteorological patterns, and all of those things, we aren't exclusive in that. We are part of the divine creative hierarchies, and in between lives, when we are closer to our source in the universal spirit, is when we are more creative agencies. And so that we create the environment that we are going to be living in. Right down to, if we're a cowboy, the grasslands and the mountains or something like that. Right now, our waking consciousness and even our creative abilities are vary from individual to individual. Depends on how much work we have done with our consciousness, how well we can create. And it takes work. I happen to be a lover of jazz, and I love John Coltrane. And John Coltrane used to go to jobs, gigs, and he would play until 2 or 3 in the morning on the gig, and his friends would drive him home, and he would start practicing after he had been playing all night long. And they would ask him, why do you practice like that after you've been playing all night? And he said, there are things that I hear that I can't do yet, or that I can't express yet. And that is pretty much what it is for all of us. To the degree that we have worked on our creative abilities, we, to that degree, we can participate in the creation. So all of these circumstances of our life are determined by us. Now, when it comes to finalization in this life, it's not certain what the outcome is going to be. In some cases, we are destined to have certain things happen to us, and we don't need to worry and fuss whether we're going to have this, whether we're going to become this or that. That's just too much busy work in ignorance, because what we're going to do is pretty much developed. But in final, nothing is known for certain, especially when we are at the frontier of our creative abilities. It's not certain whether we're going to be successful at one thing or another, and that's why we have to live it out. If we knew beforehand everything there was going to be, we wouldn't have to live it out. We wouldn't have to be proved or prove it to ourselves or have that final creative completion. In this, there are some things that we can count on. And my talks in the morning with astrology and in the evening for the spiritual philosophy are going to be working on the principle of cause and consequence. And that's one thing that we can be certain of. We can be certain that we will get exactly what we need for our development. Exactly. Whatever we need, we're going to get. Because once we assert ourselves and once we try something, that's one side of a silhouette. That's the causal side of a silhouette. And what we produce in the world, or what the world seems to give to us, is the other side of the silhouette, and it gives us the exact response to whatever we have caused. So despite all of this certainty, we're not often conscious of all of the developments that come on our life. Even events that happen to us, remarkable events, they don't sink into us. I can give you an example of something that I learned about myself that it took 30 years to understand, an experience that took place in 15 minutes of time. When I was a young man, I took a trip to Mexico, and I was in downtown Mexico City, and I needed to get out to the bus lines, and they have bus terminals in various parts of the city, and I had no way to get there. And Mexico City is a very large city. I think it's one of the five largest cities in the world right now. And so I took a cab, and it was a hair-raising experience, because sometimes I thought the driver had sideways wheels on the car because he could go in and out of traffic so rapidly. And I was in terror all the way, and everybody was driving like that. And it was an experience that really hit me hard. And 30 years later, I figured it out, that if I had been driving in Mexico City, I would have been a menace on the highway, because I would have been following the laws, and I would not have been adapting to the environment. And sometimes we have events that, even though we have precipitated those events, it takes us sometimes thousands of years to know the meaning of something, because our waking up is a very, very slow process. So we're talking about something that can be very deep, something that we can put all of our consciousness into. Now, what we are in is an ongoing creative process. What is the statement, the old folk statement about that? Time waits for no one. And what it means to say that it keeps going. It just doesn't stop just because we've had an event or something like that occur in our life. Now, because of the depth and complexity of destiny, it's not something that our human mind can encompass. We can't swallow it whole at this time. Eventually, we'll have the kind of consciousness where we can understand the large-scale divine creative causes that are behind this, when we can answer that question that we've been asking since the first day that we began with spiritual studies. Why does this all happen? What is the purpose of it all? And it takes us a long time to grow into the ability to get an answer to that. But we keep trying, and we keep wondering why the things happen to us, why an apple falls on our head, leading to the principle of universal gravitation, or all of those simple kinds of questions that have very profound answers. We keep working at them, and our understanding becomes deeper, and it becomes spread to more different things. Now, since astrology indicates the timing of the cosmos. In the same way that the breathing and the heartbeat and such represent the timing of our physical body, the movements of the planets and the major bodies in our solar system are reflections of the timing of the change of mood and the change of activity in our solar system. And we understand this. This is why we study astrology, so that we have something that we can ponder on, and by pondering on it, we can understand why things are as they are and how we can participate without being out of harmony with the greater ongoing work of creativity. But what happens is we're not always live. We're not always thinking in the moment. And it's easier for us to have some kind of theory. And astrology is rife with theories. It's one of those things that we who study arcane things are a very peculiar kind of people. And in short, we're misfits. In some cases that's very good, in some cases it's not. And in our misfitness, because we have stepped out of conventional society, we're urged to get back in by ridicule or social censure or things of that nature. And so we are pushed back in, and all of us who are misfits have experienced all kinds of things. And we develop a kind of personality. And we have to be very careful to be healthy individuals, because it is very easy to become a weirdo and pride yourself in being weird rather than priding yourself in being in touch with reality and being harmonious with what the truth is, not necessarily convention. And so you find among astrologers an attitude of, I've got a theory, and people define themselves by their theory. And there have been many, many theories about rebirth and cause and consequence with regard to astrology. Somebody said, well, if you do this, if you look at this place in the horoscope, it'll tell you what part of the world you were in your past rebirth. I'm sure you've all run into those kinds of things. There are many, many of them. I have looked at a lot of these for a lot of years, and some of them actually do have something to them, but none of them give everything that they advertise. I have found no system of this kind that works completely. There is no substitute for thinking and intuiting live in the moment when you have the horoscope in front of you. That's basically what you have to do. Now, because they strike once in a while, it seems these things are really great systems. Now, there are limits of our understanding, and there are limits to our ability to contemplate character and destiny. And we should always be seeking to understand astrology and destiny better, because then we can really be helpful to people when they're working with a problem. Destiny is continuous. The cosmos, in which is sort of the vessel of destiny, is also continuous. Astrology, like horoscopes, for example, is a mapping of the cosmos at a given time, at a given place. It is a vantage point of what's going on in the cosmos as seen from one direction at one time. That's literally what a horoscope is. A horoscope is a representation of a rebirth, and it's you look at the horoscope, it's a static thing. That is one point of view. And it's a reference point in an ongoing continuum. The ongoing continuum of what's going on in the world and the ongoing continuum in the evolution of character within an individual. So it has to be accurate, because you can't look at a photograph of one person and try to understand the character of that person if the photograph is for somebody else. You know what I'm trying to say? It has to be representative. So a horoscope should be very accurate. And when we start interpreting it, there are two major ways that we can interpret a horoscope, though almost everybody only interprets it one of those two ways. I think the future is in the other way. But both are important, and both are should be worked on to understand. The first way is from the past. When you have the horoscope of someone that has been reborn into this plane to carry out this life, the horoscope is a statement of the sum total of all of the ripe destiny of this individual from the past. So the whole horoscope is destiny. The whole horoscope is what a person is ready to tackle this time around. Now, because of human limitations, there's only so much of the past that we can handle in one rebirth, especially since we've been very imperfect individuals and we have built up what the Orthodox Christians would call a burden of sin. We've built up a lot of past destiny that needs to be discharged, and we can't do it all at one time, or we would be crushed. It's a mark from a spiritual point of view. It is a mark of strength for an individual to have a life that is filled with one tragedy after another, because it means that they're ready to take those kinds of experiences and benefit from them, and the more that we can handle, the better it is for our development. So we can only take so much in one rebirth. So when we say the destiny that is ripe, we're saying that the horoscope is an indication of what is ripe for this time. Of course, this is all stated in symbolic form. And the kind of consciousness that is our real consciousness, because we are cosmic beings. And our nature is truly cosmic. We tend to think of things here in terms of biochemistry and physiology and what the physical body is, without realizing that our consciousness, in our innermost being, we are like the cosmos. And the flavor of character, the way we think, the flavor of our emotions, is an astrological flavor. So for us, when we're looking here from a material point of view, which is very limited, we see astrology is pointing to different kinds of events or things like that, but what it's really pointing to is the kind of character in the flavors of consciousness that we have brought ready to objectify, to externalize. So the horoscope is a perfect representation of what we have ripened. Now, since things ripen slowly, and since we're self-conscious and live in the now, and since we have live intuition, and we are right now, we can have a lot of input. Past. Actually, all of our life, this is another curiosity about what we live in. All of our life, we are living with regard to the past. past. This, all of this stuff, is crystallized sunlight from the past. And when we interact with this, when I stumble on it or something of that nature, I'm actually interacting with something from the past. Everything that is in our life that is indicated in our horoscope in that moment when we set to work again in this plane is a consequence of our own doing. We can't say that destiny is doing something to us. We can't say that our life, if we had more breaks, we would have had a better life. Because we have produced everything that we live in. It's a very firm world that we live in. If there are shortcomings in our lives, there are shortcomings in our character. This is going to sound terribly hard and cruel, but people who are born to poverty and who live in poverty and disease and things like that, from a viewpoint of destiny, are people who for a long, long time have not really fully participated and have not given themselves to lies. And then you have somebody like John Kennedy, who was born, who's very bright, who's physically capable, and he's born to great wealth and education and all of those things, like Superman. He reads 5 newspapers every morning. That's somebody who has given himself to destiny quite a bit. And as a result, he has a very fortunate life. So if we're unhappy with our lives, we have to be unhappy with ourselves. We have to do something about it. We have to educate ourselves. We have to put ourselves into bringing things about. We have the freedom to choose to do this. We can allow destiny to happen to us. Or we can take responsibility and give ourselves to the circumstances that occur. So this begins to open us up to the other major perspective of the horoscope. This moment, right now, whether it's the moment of birth or if it's this instant that we're living right now, is the doorway to the future. Each moment is a doorway between the past and the future. It's the only gateway we have, and if we want to get something done, we have only now to do it. Flies away very quickly. One entire lifetime is a moment. From beginning to end, from childhood to old age and decrepitude is one moment. We don't get that many, we get that many chances if we don't take them. Destiny is often regarded as something that is ominous and fateful. And it's only that if we have taken that attitude about the world, that the world is against us and shit happens and all of those kinds of things, that's up to us. We make our own limits. We make our own badness out of society. The reality is that ongoing destiny is quite a spontaneous activity. And living in a spontaneous way is the best way to live, to be in harmony with destiny. Now all of this is very sketchy, and we'll be talking more about it this evening. Now, the other way of looking at a horoscope is the idea that somebody has for the future. The horoscope represents someone's creative experiment, what they could be, what they would like to be. It can be both simultaneously. It can be a matter of destiny, and we can look at it, everything as being destined, but we can also look at it as these are what we have set up for ourselves. This is our plan of attack. This is how we want to treat life and deal with life and how we want to bring things about. This is the kind of astrology that I believe is of the future. And this is a kind of astrology that is not very well practiced. Most people, for them, the past is a very secure thing because it's already in the bag. It's quite factual. It's historical. But the future is much more tentative. It's much more theoretical. And so the horoscope viewed from that point of view represents the opportunity to look ahead and see what things are actually available. Now, when we began this talk, we began talking about a big idea that I had. Actually, it was a small idea of what I wanted to do in these astrology talks. And it turned out to be a much bigger thing that I am capable of. I recognized my inadequacy and my inferiority relative to the task. But it's not a bad thing, as long as you don't picture yourself as being that way all the time. If an individual is not some kind of a seer of a very high order, it's unlikely that someone can produce a principle about rebirth. Very hard to follow someone from rebirth to rebirth because one has to be able to go deep into the spiritual worlds and follow them all the way through the entire cycle. And the people who are capable of doing that, that have the inner vision to do that and have trained that vision, are very, very rare. And following a person over many rebirths is something that is also exceedingly difficult. Now, it doesn't mean that it's impossible, but it means that a lot of the systems and a lot of the notions that people have about rebirth are very tentative. They're on shaky ground. It's all right to try to do things like that, to form hypotheses, but we must remember that they're always speculations. I am a great speculator. I love to speculate, and I believe that speculation is a framework that is very flexible. And on that framework, you can guide your observations, you can guide your thinking so that you can see the truth. But there's a danger of having speculations and taking them as universal principles or something like that. It's extremely important to remember that is a speculation until it has been proven and brought into a state of positivity. Now, it's possible that one can intuit things from past lives without it having to be knowledge. However, it's true that most of this kind of activity is gross speculation. And all of the theories that people have, myself included, are often unnecessary, and sometimes they're distracting. Carrying around a big theoretical framework instead of looking right at events and issues as they come up. It's only necessary to bring a person to an awareness of what they are doing in their consciousness and what they are doing in their lives, and one doesn't have to have a great theory about that. Most people can correct behavior and they can begin to understand things on their own, And the duty of an astrologer is just merely to be a mirror or to provide feedback in helping a person to find themselves. It's sort of like when you have all kinds of thoughts and feelings and you have a real problem that you're dealing with, sometimes it's nice to have somebody to talk to. Because in objectifying your thoughts, you clarify them and you can see where things are going. There's a lot of sensationalism in talking about past lives. And when there's a lot of that, it puts the whole view of life into a quality of unreality. And one of the things that happens is when we start looking too much at our lives in terms of past lives, and we're looking at the woes that we have, the pains and the illnesses and things like that, we start to get a fatalistic view, and we start to get a punitive fatalistic view. Punishment is a human creation. It's an aberration, or it's a misunderstanding of destiny. The divine does not punish. When we get perfect feedback for what we have put out, it might seem like punishment because we have that very primitive and ugly consciousness that believes in punishment. It's only humans that punish. We have a very schizophrenic view about it. We call our prisons places, we call them correctional institutions. At the same time, you know, it's called the Department of Corrections here in Wisconsin. But you go to one of the prisons and it's called a penal colony or something like that. And we have a very bad view of things in that way. I hope it's adequately clear by now that we create our destiny. And we're not being punished. We're being brought to acute awareness of what we have created. Now the idea that I wanted to put into these talks, and which we will in a very limited way, was one that was developed by Max Seindel, who was the founder of the Rosicrucian Fellowship, and who was a very good seer who could follow people back through several lives. It was not given as a mechanism or anything really clearly defined. And it was not given as something that was inescapable. It seemed to be something as a general idea that he observed when looking at many individuals over several past lives. The idea is that there is a pace to destiny. And that pace has a par to it. You could say that there's a par destiny or a normal destiny. And he associated that destiny with cardinal signs, Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. The principle of destiny is sometimes called the principle of action. And the cardinal signs are signs of action. This has that whole idea to it that what we are in is meant to be an active thing because the universe is alive and our live actions should fit in with that. Now when he gives this idea, it's a vague idea. He isn't necessarily talking about sun signs or rising signs or lunar signs or anything specific like that. He just gives a general view of things, though he does quite often associate it with sun signs. So the idea seemed to be that the most rudimentary destiny was cardinal sign destiny, the destiny of direct, immediate notions of actions and reactions. You step on the rake and the handle bops you in the head. That is pay-as-you-go destiny. It's immediate feedback. And he spoke about it mostly in terms of moral things, in terms of our interactions with other people. And then he mentions that there are cases that there are irretrievable acts, or at least immediately irretrievable actions. If you've just murdered somebody, it's kind of hard to make it up to them because they aren't there to make it up to them. Or if you do something very late in life and you pass on, there wasn't time to get the immediate payback of destiny. And that is the way it seems to work. And what he meant, what he said then, is very often this hangover kind of destiny that is not capable of being fulfilled in one life but is carried into the next becomes common sign destiny. Common signs are Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces. And these are signs of service. Nurses, people in the whole service industry, messengers, people of that ilk. The idea is that to the soul or to the spirit or to the individual, that if they have made a mistake and they have harmed someone else from keeping on with their part destiny, that they can make it up to them through service. Suppose, for example, somebody was being educated and you made it impossible for them to fulfill their educational needs. In your next life, you may become an educator, and the primary purpose is to bring that, to educate this person, like it or not. You might be their personal tutor or something of that nature, because then you're making up to them what they lost in a previous life by giving them the education. So it's a fairly common thing. But the thing about common signs is, or mutable signs they're sometimes called, is they can do everything in their inner consciousness instead of carrying things out. These are the alibi signs we're talking about. They're communicative signs, and if you can put something in word, it's easy to talk a good game, which is very different than living it. And so what happens is the common sign destiny is the kind of destiny of shirkers, people who do not do things. And so the same quality, when used correctly, gives you the ability to serve and make something up. But it also has the character that if you misuse it, you have all kinds of alibis for not doing it. And if you don't do it, then the destiny becomes fixed sign destiny. The fixed signs are Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. It becomes fixed sign destiny because it becomes indubitable. It's very deeply ingrained in the character. It is a part of you. And it is almost completely undeniable. The almost is an important word. Because we are told by the biblical Christ, ask whatsoever ye will in my name, and it will be given unto you. There was no limitation saying, ask whatsoever ye will, except if you have Saturn in Taurus square to Pluto in Leo, and it will be given unto you. It's whatever. However, sometimes the asking is very hard, and sometimes the ability to change things the fixed signs are cumbersome. Like this talk, grinds along very slowly. It's cumbersome, it's heavy. And when you get the momentum going, it becomes almost unstoppable. It's not like a ping pong ball that you can deflect. It's like a cannonball. Something very funny. Do you read The Onion? There was a fantastically funny line in The Onion this last week talking about indubitable things. It says, man survives mauling incident with bear and lives to talk about it for 3 minutes. Oh, thank you. I love that paper. They come up with all that really crazy stuff. If we don't believe something can be changed, we're not going to change it. And things strike us in a way, you know, the Taurus or the fixed sign sets itself. And it takes, I had a friend that had 5 planets in Scorpio. He was a boxer. And he succeeded. He says, I could take a punch. He said, I'd let them hit me and hit me, and I'd get inside, and I'd work on them. And that's sort of the Scorpio attitude. So if that's the destiny becomes fixed destiny, unavoidable destiny, because we have made it that. Our character has become that. Sometimes it even happens that even after a strong fixed sign destiny life, the person still doesn't get it. And sometimes things over again and again and again with harder and harder destiny experiences until they do get it. So this is a very good principle for understanding psychology. It's something that can be overused, and it's something that helps you to understand what kind of a situation a person is in from one life to the next. And it's helpful for us without having definite past life information. It is helpful for us to, you know, understand and help our friends around us. This is like all things astrological, it can be abused. You know, you can say to somebody, you're never going to learn your lesson. You're one of those fixed signs. You're going to be stuck forever. And you can do it that way, and you can point fingers and say, oh, that person's got all kinds of common sign destiny. They only talk a good game, and they really don't live it out. And that that is, those are all things that can happen with astrology. Astrology there is judgment in astrology. You have to judge whether a person is likely to do something or unlikely to do something. But to be judicial is a very different thing to be blaming with judgment. And the astrology, though it would work very well at it, is not good for. It's not a good idea to be blaming people. So what we're going to do is tomorrow we're going to talk about cardinal sign horoscopes. And we're going to talk about action and par destiny by looking at people who have a strong accentuation in cardinal signs. It's going to be rather light. It's not really astrology, because for it to be really astrology, you have to study a lot for a long time. And then Wednesday, we'll take fixed sign astrology, common sign horoscopes, and then Thursday we'll take fixed sign horoscopes, and then on Friday we'll do something else. Now, we've talked so long that there's hardly any time left for anything astrological, but so we have just a few minutes, and we'll have a look at only one horoscope today. We'll look at the horoscope of Max Heindel, which will help us. We'll look at it in terms of destiny, so that we can understand the character of somebody who is a founder and who got this very beautiful philosophy going in this world. If we look at this horoscope, or if we look at any horoscope, the first house represents infancy and early childhood, especially the opportunities that are unique to an individual in childhood. And the cusp, which is the first cusp, is called the ascendant. And in this case, we can see it has 6 degrees and 15 minutes of Leo on the ascendant. The first cusp is the cusp of all cusps. It sets the tone for all of the other cusps. And it marks the moment of birth. The ascendant is the birth moment. Everything going forward from the ascendant is the future. It's the infancy, it's the early childhood. And everything going backward from the ascendant into the 12th house represents the immediate past. For example, a lot of people who have Neptune on the ascendant in the 12th house are people who are ether babies, if you know what an ether baby is. It is someone who the mother was given ether so that she could bear the pains of childbirth. And that was immediately before the birth, and that works into the physical consciousness of the developing child. So that the ascendant represents the present. Now, often, the 12th house represents the immediately precedent rebirth. You can't say it always, but who somebody was or what was most important from the life before this life is indicated by the 12th house. It represents the end of the cycle, just as the first house represents the beginning of the cycle. Now, if we look at this, the moon is in Leo, and it's very deep in the 12th, and it conjoins the ascendant. So this is someone, the 12th represents ripeness. This is somebody who is almost overly ripe from past lives. The moon forms two important aspects. Number one, it conjoins the ascendant, which means that the effects from the past are already beginning to radiate into the present. Moreover, it's a new moon. He was born 9 hours and some minutes after a new moon, which represents a restart. So this is a horoscope that indicates a readiness from past lives, and it's ready to restart and push into this world. But in pushing into this world, the person does not want to be showy. This is somebody that likes to retreat into the 12th house and emanate into the present. So the new moon represents a new beginning, and the 12th house represents an ending of a lot of past life destiny. The 12th house, sometimes a person is so much burdened by past life destiny that they have a hard time seeing things. And so there is a question of ignorance and darkness and things like that. In this horoscope, the ignorance and darkness are indicated by the Saturn, Sun square to Saturn. But the aspect is separating, saying that this is somebody who's coming out of ignorance. And it is a second square rather than a first square, so this shows something that is dissolving and that is passing away. The moon, which is taking energy from the sun and broadcasting it into the world through the ascendants, so to speak, is trine to Neptune, which indicates that it is spiritual things that he is ripe for. It is spiritual light that he gives into the world. It's applying, and it is a first trine, both of which mean that this is something that's coming on, and it's coming on stronger and faster all the time. So this is a horoscope that indicates a big change from getting rid of a very heavy past and as much as he could bear from the past, and bringing a new spirituality forward into the future.
So this is a really very clear-cut character. It's easy to understand. And this is someone who, if he spoke to you, you knew what he meant. He made no bones about anything. He just put it all forward. Now, Mercury is in the first house. That represents that present. And Mercury is in a very strong trine, almost exact trine to Jupiter. So we can see that he is well-suited. Mercury is the messenger. And he is good at communicating and expressing and pouring things out. It's a very excellent chart for somebody who wants to talk, or who wants to write, or who wants to express things outwardly into the world. Now, it's very hard, and it gets harder to enter into the process of initiation, because everything is accelerating, and to accelerate beyond the normal acceleration of the world is a very hard thing to do. So this is someone who worked extremely hard and gave himself with all of that leonine devotion so that he could become an initiate and give something to the world. Now, often special sacrifices are what prepare a person. Now, I'm going to tell you what is an anecdotal story about Max Heindel. The anecdotal story is that in his previous life, he was in a religious order, a Catholic Christian order, as many were. And according to the anecdote, his sacrifice was he could see that things were not being done right. People were not living according to their vows. They were not living the Christ life. And he was very outspoken. And because of his outspokenness, he met with the disfavor of the order. And the disfavor of the order wasn't particularly Christian. He had to leave the order very rapidly with dogs after him. According to the story, even in this life, as Max Heindel, he was very edgy about being around dogs. So the idea was that the dogs eventually chased him down and that he was undone. But because he stood for the truth and spoke up for the truth and lived outrightly this kind of a positive life, this is what made him eligible, because his character was direct and open and honest, and he was frank about what he felt things should be. And because he lived that out even to the death of his physical body, this is the kind of character that you want to represent. You can't represent spiritual things with somebody who is a character panty waist, who doesn't have the courage to speak something out, doesn't have the courage to live by conviction. You want somebody that lives the truth and lives it in a very staunch way. Now, whether the story is true or not, it's not in ad harmony with the horoscope. The horoscope says this is somebody that has a hangover of destiny from a past life and someone who is very, very ripe. And the moon is the way of bringing that solar light into the present. And the moon deposits itself. The moon rules the 12th house, and in order to get itself into the open, everything is contingent on his ability to bear light. Now, that's about as much as I want to say about it. It's just, in fact, this is about all I have to say for this morning. Tomorrow will be a lot of horoscopes, and it'll be a lot lighter. But what we have here is the horoscope of someone who sacrificed and sacrificed very deeply, and because of that has cleared up a lot of things, and in that clarity is capable of bringing through spiritual light. And when the spiritual light is radiated into the personality, it is a personality that is capable of communicating and expressing and pouring it out extremely well. So this is an example of how character becomes destiny. I guess I have nothing more to say, and we have a tradition that I'll print some out for this afternoon, that at the end of every session, what we do is we all say the Rosicrucian students' prayer together in unity. I'll print out copies of it for people who don't know. So let's do that now. O God, increase our love for Thee so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Are there any questions?
Did Nephew number 12 also show that he carries it through as far as the spiritual part to the world?
Normally, Aries represents
leadership, and Libra Leo represents rulership. And this indicates with Neptune in Aries that there is a possibility of being a spiritual leader, not a dominant ruler. Unfortunately, that always happens anyway because of his Leonine character. I think it's a good thing to have role models. I think it's a good thing to look up to people and learn from them, because by the strength of their character, you can follow and you can develop. But what too often happens is we deify people and we let them be what we aren't doing ourselves. And sometimes the more we take somebody as our idol, the less we live our own lives, and the disparity between what we should be doing and what we put into our role model increases the crank factor, so that the more you realize you're not living it and people are challenging you, the more you become a fanatic about this individual. But yes, this the 10th house is out there for the world to see. And it's very difficult to put spiritual things out there for the world to see, but a lot of people did see anyway, because his character was so sterling. Yes?
Did you comment on Saturn conjoining the moon, and then the sun is square the nodes as well as square to Saturn?
That is the north node and not the south node. The south node is in the 10th house. And the nodes are where the moon's orbit crosses the sun's orbit. And the moon is the materializer and the sun is the vitalizer. So they represent points
where there is a change of state toward either greater vitalization or toward greater materialization. And the south node, which is called the dragon's tail, it's called the dragon because whenever there's a new moon or a full moon near the nodes, it is an eclipse. And an eclipse is when the dragon swallows either the sun or the moon and there is darkness in day or night. The dragon's tail is the transition from the more solar vitalizing, energizing, life-giving qualities to the more material. And because of that, the moon's south node, or the dragon's tail, is considered impedimental. it's sort of like you're trying to dive into the world, but the world, there's a lot of resistance. And what the dragon's head means is that the state of the cycle between the sun and the moon is such that the things are passing from the material toward a more spiritual vitalization type of quality. And when Saturn is conjoined to that in that square quality, it indicates that there is a drawback, that Saturn is in the fourth house and there's a certain amount of darkness with that. And this indicates that even though he spoke up in past lives about people not doing what they should in the Christian orders, he had some of that in himself. And for him, it was impedimental or holding back the light. It built up the energy so that he could eventually push through, but it indicated that he had a trial that was a trial to hide the light. Saturn is the darkener and it is the hider, and it is the fourth house is very personal. And so his trial was to keep things to himself personally. The anecdote is that the teacher appeared to him, materialized to him, and said, I'll give you answers to all those things that you want, but you must keep them to yourself. And he said, no, I will not do that. He says, the Bible tells us we should not hide our light under a bushel. And because of that, that was a passing of his trial. Now, a trial is specific to each individual. Your trial will not be the same as Max Heindel's trial, nor will mine, nor will anyone else's. For example, Rudolf Steiner at the same time was accused of not passing his trial, and this is all hearsay, and people think that he had the same trial. He did not have the same trial because he was Rudolf Steiner and I was a different character, and his trial was altogether different. His was almost completely opposite. So what this represents is some kind of wanting to hold things in that needs to be broken down, which is what a second square does. The first square is a materializing or an objectifying square. The second square is a dissolution square, and it's a breakdown square. And that square of Sun and Saturn like that is breaking down the old ways so that they can be basically turn into soul or be spiritualized. And the Saturn represents resistance, and that resistance allowed him to build up the energy and eventually break through, but it's something that he had to deal with all of his life. It is worked all the way into his character, into his physical personality, because his lungs could not stand because of restriction of Saturn, not the lungs, the kidneys, because of Saturn is in Libra, and that holds back, and his kidneys could not stand all of the pressure from, you know, this is a full all-out heart person. And he very often had dropsical conditions where he took on all kinds of water and things like that when he had heart conditions, and that was that same kind of hold back thing that in the kidneys that did that. Is that enough of an answer?
Yeah,
okay.
Yes. How do you know what is a first square and a second square? You're using that terminology and I have no idea what
yes,
it means.
All right. Let's take the standard cycle, which is the sun and the moon. And the sun, the moon eventually goes to a square here, and it becomes an opposition or full moon here, and it becomes a square here. In the first half of the cycle, the sun gives to the moon, and it builds. And so the first square is a constructive or a building square. You can take it between any two planets. The smaller planet from the conjunction to the opposition rules the first half of the cycle, and it gives its energy to the faster moving planet.
the full moon, the moon starts giving its light back to the sun, it wanes and it gets smaller, and it is a time of dissolution, absorption, and assimilation.
Oh, so they're kind of like the new moon to full moon, and then full moon back to new moon.
And in this case, we have Saturn here in this position,
and the Sun is in this position, and Saturn is the slower moving planet, so this is a second square, which would be like a third quarter moon.
Everything is, the tempo of everything is shown in the relationship between the Sun and the Moon. Any other questions?
So then from where the Sun is, the first half of the, or where the Sun and Moon is together?
Yeah.
It's where the Sun and Moon is together, that first half of the horoscope is what you call the first square.
First phase, yes.
First phase, and that's more of a developmental phase.
And
the second half again is?
Dissolution, absorption, and assimilation.
That's releasing too, right?
What?
Releasing also?
Releasing.
Yes.
You can say in the first half that the Sun gives to the Moon, or you can look at it the other way around and you can see that the Moon draws the Sun out. And in the second half you can see that the Moon gives to the Sun, or gives back to the Sun, or the Sun demands back from the Moon what it had given out in the first place.
Sort of like action in the first half and reflected in the second half.
Yes, yes.
We have still two aspects of one thing.
Yes, it's all in one, the cycle. In these realms, things are delineated in time. And cyclical time is a very important thing. Everything is rhythmic and repetitive, and progress takes place with a person being well-rounded, and you get all the different points of view in the course of the cycle.
Okay. I have a question about the, you said an ether baby has to do with Neptune on the cusp. So
just
the
yeah. If you were in this Max Andor's book, where the Moon is, if you put Neptune there, that would very likely be something like an ether baby.
No.
If Neptune,
that way rules drugs and foreign substances that change consciousness. And it was fashionable in the 30s and 40s to give the mother ether, so that in the same way they inject the spine now, in order so that there's not pain in childbirth. And in those days, they used ether. And ether would indicate that there was something, probably was in the blood of the mother and it affected the consciousness of the child coming to birth.
And that's if Neptune actually is placed there, or if the cusp is Pisces.
Other things with Neptune there, but I've seen it often be that. Mars on either side of the ascendant, but very close, is a pincer's baby. In the first house, you know what a pincer's baby is?
Yes.
It's not a mild operation. They put that pincers on and they brace against the bed and they pull the child out of the womb. It's not a delicate brain surgery kind of thing. Huh?
That's what happened with my older son. After 50 hours, he didn't come, and they finally used forceps.
Yeah.
What about when the umbilical cord is wrapped around the neck? What's that called?
I don't know about that. I don't have a lot of experience with it. I have had experiences with Saturn, conjoined the ascendant from the 12th house. One person especially, I went with that person, and her father, because mother got pregnant, the father was not able to go to law school, and he hated the baby during the entire time, because it was when he was supposed to be in law school, and that hate radiated into, that was then part of the 12th house of that person through life. Okay.
You weren't by any chance an ether baby?
Yes.
Oh, you were? Okay.
I have an excuse.
Okay, but you said it can be either Neptune there, or if the cusp is Pisces, which is ruled by Neptune, that also can affect it?
Could be, yes, but you have to be careful about collecting information like this. When I offer things like that, I don't offer them for information, I offer them for examples. Because if you collect information, then you become an information-oriented person, and there's an unlimited amount of information, and the next case may be very different. But if you get the idea that you can look at something as an example, and from that you can intuit and you can understand the situation, you know, like for me, I'm a caller of the pain. I had that Neptune conjunction ascended from the 12th house, and that there's something like a shirking of immediate experience. And like I use a novocaine when I did dental work done. And that indicates how my character is related to the character of the situation when I was born.
Okay, well, I'm looking at my horoscope, and I've got Pisces on the ascendant, and that's ruled by Neptune, and it's the exact opposite of of Neptune.
Yeah.
But I don't use novocaine at all. I can help without.